Either council have any questions before we begin? Very good. Mr. Kosmicki, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Matt Kosmicki. I represent the appellant, Charlie Johnson, in this appeal from the Lancaster County Court. Mr. Johnson was convicted in Lancaster County Court of bigamy. We appealed to the district court. It was affirmed, and we appealed to the court of appeals. And then there was a petition for further review up to here, and that's why I'm here today. By way of facts, briefly, in June 25th of 2015, Mr. Johnson and Shelley Peterson applied for a marriage license from the Lancaster County Clerk. On July 5th of 2015, there was a ceremony in Midland, Texas, in the backyard of Mr. Johnson's sister's house. They traveled back to Lincoln. On the way back, the party stipulated that Mr. Johnson had called his sister, said, "Don't sign that, don't send it in." Later on, they became aware that there wasn't a marriage license. Somehow in January 19th, 2017, a license was filed with the Lancaster County Clerk with the names of Johnson and Peterson on it. And then in 2018, Charlie Johnson married Natalie Forney. Miss Peterson was trying to do some taxes things, was discovered she couldn't file it because he'd already filed joint married, and there was an investigation and he was charged with bigamy.
The replacement marriage certificate, the second one. How was that obtained? Was Mr. Johnson part of the obtaining of that second marriage certificate?
Well, the stipulated facts are is that the clerk, that he appeared in front of the clerk's house, at the clerk's office, signed another marriage certificate, which to me is interesting because it was after July 4th, 2015, and the clerk apparently it's notarized the signature as they signed it back in June 25th of 2015. This was way after, and then that marriage certificate didn't turn up until in 2017 in January. To be guilty of bigamy, Mr. Johnson had to be any married person having a husband or wife shall marry another person is guilty of bigamy. The state had to prove Johnson was validly married to Peterson to find him guilty of bigamy.
Let me stop you right there.
Sure.
Your argument is premised on inserting the word valid or validly in front of the word married in the bigamy statute, right?
Right.
But it doesn't appear in the bigamy statute, does it?
No, it doesn't appear.
Okay. Well, can we agree that this marriage was not a void marriage as a marriage, void marriage is defined in section 42-103?
That it's not a void marriage?
Not a void marriage. And just to be helpful, void marriages are void when one, neither party has a husband or wife living at the time of the marriage. Two, when either party at the time of the marriage is mentally incompetent. Or three, when the parties are related to each other, blah, blah, blah. Those are the three categories of void marriages,
right,
under 42-103. We would agree, would we not, that this one doesn't fall into any of those categories.
It's not a void marriage. Okay. We're arguing it's not a legal marriage. And I guess I use the word valid, that if that, I make that distinction because it doesn't follow the statute where there has to be a ceremony and a license. But I understand what you're saying there on those three things, which would be void, sure.
Okay, so are you familiar with the concept of a voidable marriage?
Yes.
And what's your understanding of that, and what effect, if any, does that understanding have on the case that's in front of us?
A voidable marriage to me is something that, one of those things you're talking about where someone's married. The cases that I remember are something where someone contracts to be married and the person can't have children, won't have children, any of those kind of things. Or, you know, well, someone who's mentally incompetent or something like that. You could file a void for that.
That's a void.
Right.
But voidable is a different concept, isn't it?
It is. I can't think of a good example for you that I can give you, but it is a different kind of marriage. Yes. I guess what we're arguing is that what we're saying is that I think that even though the bigamy statute is very, very old, and it says any married person, I think that married person has legal significance. What we're urging this court is that you have to be legally married. Not whether it's void or voidable, but legally married to be found guilty of bigamy.
Your argument is there has been no marriage at all.
Right? Exactly. No marriage at all. Exactly. That's the point. And I guess I relied heavily on 42-104 that says prior to the solemnization in this state, a license for that purpose shall be obtained from a county clerk of the state of Nebraska. That means, again, for a ceremony in this state.
Are you taking the position that a Nebraska marriage license cannot be solemnized outside the boundaries of the state of Nebraska?
Yes.
Do you have any authority for that proposition other than your reading of 42-104?
Well, I think that there's case law that says that, and I can point to other things. I mean, the first thing I want to just get out of the way is the marriage license itself has on it, right? And it's one of the exhibits that was received that before this be solemnized in this state, right? They have to obtain the marriage license. I think that Vlock v. Vlock, Randall versus Randall, and then more recently the Seabird versus Ali case stand for that proposition. And I'll just go right to Seabird versus Ali because it's the most recent case, but
that was not a bigamy prosecution.
No, it wasn't.
It was a determination in a proceeding involving the validity of a marriage, whether or not the marriage was valid, right?
Right.
Does that make a difference in your view?
I don't think that it makes a difference. I think Seabird versus Ali, even though it was whether someone, the validity, whether it was a putative marriage or not, right? Whether they should be putatively married. I say that word wrong all the time. But it's
for others.
I can't say it 5 times really fast. But what I think Seabird stood for at the end, right, was it says that, I'm just skipping to my notes, right? Is that it's important because for marriage to, well, let me back up.
But Seabird, there was no, we had 2 states, you had Nebraska and Hawaii.
Right.
You had a Nebraska license, but no ceremony at all. So right. It doesn't really answer the question we have here, right?
Right. In some way, but still it stands for, hey, you got to have both things. I know you have a license in Nebraska, and then in my case, you have a license from Nebraska and then a ceremony in Texas. But it's still, I think Seabird stands for is you got, what I read that to stand for was, is that you have to have a license from Nebraska and a solemnization here, just like the statute.
But in Seabird, there was no ceremony in either.
There was no ceremony in
here. We have a ceremony.
Right. Is that good? But I see him into my rebuttal time, but I'll answer really quick. I think that if there's an interest in Nebraska regulating this kind of thing, and you have to read the statutes in their entirety for the whole statutory scheme. And to me, when you read the statutes, the Marriage Act statutes, there has to be at least a license in Nebraska and a solemnization in Nebraska for there to be a valid marriage in Nebraska.
So you think the legislature wanted to prohibit that great evil of destination weddings?
Really? Yes. Are there any other questions? I'll reserve my rebuttal time.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is Mr. Johnson's direct appeal of his conviction of bigamy. Class 1 misdemeanor, citing that the evidence was not sufficient to support that conviction. This began in the county court of Lancaster County, who found Mr. Johnson guilty after a bench trial. That finding was affirmed by the district court on appeal. Just a few points I'd like to highlight. The district court found, affirmed the lower court, citing both 42-104 and the Blatch case or Block. I'm not sure which one gets, how it gets pronounced. But specifically cited that the that there were only two requirements of marriage given the finding in Blatch, the solemnization and then the marriage license being pursued and then filled out. They also cited the expectations of the parties to inform whether or not they were married under 42-114, and that was pretty much the basis of the entire affirmation.
I want to ask you the same question I asked your opponent. Referring to section 42-103, which defines void marriages in Nebraska. And we agree that this was not a void marriage.
Yes, I don't think that this is a void marriage.
Are you familiar with the concept of a voidable marriage?
Not as I should be. No, that's it here.
Then I won't ask you any more about that.
Okay. I don't get a lot of marriage questions anymore. The section 42-104 explicitly states that prior to solemnization of any marriage in this state, a license for that purpose shall be obtained from a county clerk in the state of Nebraska. The facts of this case show in the stipulation that was provided for the bench trial that a license was obtained by the county clerk, although it was filled out and then returned well after a year. I think the statutes provide that it needs to be returned within a year. There's been case law that says this, that return of that marriage certificate is not necessarily vital for the proving of a lawful marriage. And I think on the instruction sheet, it lays out that the marriage is to be performed within or for use within the state of Nebraska. And there's an instruction sheet that I think says something to the same effect. And then on the marriage license return, Mr. Johnson or whoever filled out the form indicated that the place of the ceremony was Lincoln, Nebraska. So the clerk, upon receiving the form, given the solemnization requirements and the requirements to obtain a marriage license and have it on file with the county, shows that this is potentially a marriage that occurred in Lincoln, Nebraska, despite the fact that there's evidence to suggest otherwise it was received at the bench trial. As discussed earlier, 28-701 does not strictly require that a marriage be an objectively valid marriage under statute, only that Mr. Johnson was legally married, which he was, despite the fact that that might have been in error. We're not privy to the conversation between Mr. Johnson and the clerk's office and whether or not there was any question of where.
What was the distinction you just drew? It doesn't have to be a valid marriage. It has to be a legal marriage.
So the bigamy statute just says if any married person having a husband or wife living shall marry another person, he should be deemed guilty of bigamy. But 28-701 does not strictly require that it be an objectively valid marriage. It just says a married person. It doesn't say a legally married person or a legally married person participating in a valid marriage or something to that end.
So how did he become a married person?
How did he become a married person? How does a person become a married person? According to the instruction sheet that's filled out with the Lancaster County District Court, you are to obtain a marriage license, you pay a fee, you have the ceremony solemnized by a person who is able to solemnize a ceremony, and then you return the marriage license within a year, I think is the brunt of the instruction
sheet. I beg your pardon. Is there a requirement in your view that solemnization occur in Nebraska, and what would be the authority for that?
So the statutes don't provide strictly that the solemnization has to occur in Nebraska. I think the problem with this case, and I think that the decision that becomes apparent reading through the case notes, is that you look at Vlatch, and does Vlatch, it takes for granted, I think, a little bit. It's implicit, it's not explicit. But the facts there deal with a couple that was married by a justice of the peace in a county court here in the state. And then it proceeds through the analysis based on the remaining facts of whether or not that marriage is valid. So there's no statute necessarily that says that solemnization has to happen in Nebraska. There's a lot of sort of implied language that is what is to happen. An example of that would be 42117, marriages contracted outside of the state when valid, all marriages contracted without this state, which would be valid by the laws of the country in which the same were contracted, shall be valid in courts and places in this state. You also have the Siebert case. There is, I think, a section, direct quote from that, from this court just earlier this year. The district court found that the parties did not sign and file a Nebraska marriage license in 1996, nor was a ceremony performed in Nebraska in that year. In addition, the district court found a lack of evidence that the parties obtained a marriage license or participated in a marriage ceremony in Hawaii. So I think that the, again, not explicit, but it seems to be implied that that's at least a factor in the analysis of determining whether or not a marriage is on the books.
Both the Latch case and the Siebert case involved actions which were litigating the validity of a marriage.
Yes.
This is a prosecution under a bigamy statute.
Yes.
Is the distinction, the legal distinction between those two types of actions make a difference? And if so, what?
I think that it does make a distinction, because I think that the relief that's being sought is a fair bit different. Siebert, as an example, is seeking for cover under, I'm trying to remember the name of the number of the statute, but it's basically trying to see if there's a way that assets can be afforded to a party during a marriage dissolution or a finding that there was no valid marriage, so that there's some sort of cover, being like, well, they intended to be married. And then intent sort of figures into the Vlach case as well, as to whether or not they intended, whether or not they held themselves out to be married, how did they conduct themselves afterwards. It's a long ways ago, I would say, that this compares, but there are several cases from near turn of the century that deal with this, that basically say that intent is not an element of the crime of bigamy. Richard B. Fulton is 104 Nebraska 262 from 1920, and Staley versus State 89 Nebraska 701 1911. So I think it creates a problem. And I think that, you know, I'm sort of flummoxed by the problem myself, and I think that I get that across in my brief, that
has the language of the bigamy statute significantly changed in the respect that we are talking about since the time that common law marriage was legal in Nebraska? It hasn't been for many, many, many years, but
yes. Yeah. And having reviewed the bigamy statute as covered in the 1920 and 1911, and there's also another State versus Staley, or Staley versus State case in 1910. And the language is not identical, but it is fairly similar in that it is fairly brief, and it essentially says that a person, you know, legally married to another person.
Does it say legally married, or does
okay, it says a person,
married person,
a married person, and then it provides unless, you know, what has now taken the form of the affirmative defenses that are also provided in there. It has a very similar.
So that married person language is virtually unchanged since the days when Nebraska recognized common law marriage.
As far as I know, yeah. It's a little bit before all of our times, I think, but yes.
Well, I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. Has there been an argument raised about the breadth of the criminal statute, or vagueness, or a motion to quash, or anything of that nature in this case?
Not in this case, no. I mean, the record, unfortunately, is a little scarce on what the rationale of the county court, what the argument and rationale of the county court is. It sounds like it was submitted on briefs, and then the rationale by the county court was just basically found guilty of bigamy, you know, sentence, et cetera. And then the district court provided just a fairly quick paragraph. So there were no pretrial motions, I think, to quash this based on those. I might be remembering that incorrectly. There was discussion. The appellant's argument is pretty much renewed here from the district court appeal. And so this issue has been present, and I'm sure it was probably part of the analysis at the county court level as well, but not having access to those briefs in the record and not having access to much in the way of argument there, I can't be 100% sure if it was raised, but this is not a new, novel argument that is just being raised for the first time on appeal, for sure.
The facts that we have in this case, did Mr. Maybe the facts aren't there, but did Mr. Johnson think he was married, and does that make any difference to our analysis?
There are indications that he thought that he was, I mean, again, they participated in a ceremony. It was officiated by a relative of his who was a minister. They had Facebook pictures of a party. They were referring to each other in text messages as husband and wife. You know, there is some evidence to suggest that he thought that he was married to this person. At least they took substantial steps in that direction. But again, I would point back to those earlier cases from the early 1900s that say that intent, you know, effectively doesn't matter. Whether or not he thought he was married or not doesn't play into bigamy as it was understood and litigated back then, which is sort of the rash of the, I think, when formal record keeping of marriage licenses became a thing. You started seeing a lot of people being tried for bigamy, and that's where you get those cases from, and it sort of died off after a while. But there are no cases subsequent to that that seem to show that the intent element has changed over time. But there, again, hasn't been very much in the way of prosecution since then. Submit would just submit on those points in its brief if there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute, 7 seconds.
1 minute and 7 seconds, Mr. Kosmicki.
I would just like to point out, I think that the courts, or there are cases in Nebraska, which would be Randall versus Randall and Koppel versus Boland, stand for the proposition that substantial compliance with the Marriage Act does not make a marriage valid. You know, I reiterate what was held in Randall, where the court said that the act must be read in its entirety. One cannot create a valid marriage ceremony in Nebraska as if one were ordering from a menu in a Chinese restaurant, taking one from column A, one from column B. Under Nebraska law, a failure to obtain a valid license prior to entering into the marriage ceremony invalidates the marriage. To answer your question, Justice Miller-Lehrman, there was not a motion to quash filed in this case ever. So that wouldn't be, that's why it's not in the record, that's the one filed. And then just to address your question about void versus voidable, I understand what void is. Voidable would be something that I think maybe, I'm not a domestic practice attorney, I do criminal defense, but to me it's something where the marriage, there's a problem with the marriage, and probably on application of either party, they could try to void the marriage. I don't know if I'm hitting that right, but that's what I'm saying. There's some that are just outright marriage between, you know, family members would be void, those kind of things where they, so I think that's a void marriage. I'm not sure if I'm hitting that right, but that's what I was sitting there trying to think. Cause I know I read voidable, and I just can't recall what that is or articulate it for you, but sorry about it. If there are any more questions, I can answer for the court. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments in State versus Johnson. Court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Mann versus Mann.